Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Saturday evening, April 9th. It is good to be with you this evening. It's going to be a very high-energy program tonight, as it always is. I've actually been up here at the studios for most of the afternoon. I typically get here about 30, 45 minutes before showtime. Keith Alexander just rolled in a few minutes ago, but I've been up here at WLRM for most of the afternoon, catching up on emails and various fan correspondence that has been long overdue, and now I am ready to rock and roll. Welcome again, my friends. James Edwards, the political cesspool. We're here at our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. Also broadcasting here in Memphis on AM 1600 WMQM, our newest affiliate station, as well as the affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and simulcasting online, thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. If you have not yet joined us in the Council of Conservative Citizens online chat and political cesspool virtual fan party, do so now, please. CFCC.org. Just go there, log into the chat room, and converse while the show is going on with other political cesspool fans from around the world. CFCC.org. Now, in a typical week in between our Saturday Night Live programs, and by the way, the political cesspool gives new meaning to the phrase Saturday Night Live, I think you'll all agree. But in between our Saturday night shows, we, of course, get on the website and blog about different hot button stories that have caught our attention. In a typical week, we do maybe 10 to a dozen stories at thepoliticalcesspool.org. This week, we have done double that. There's just so much happening that's up our alley that we've just had the afterburners on double time. And if you've not visited our website in the last week, you've got a lot of catching up to do. Go back a couple of pages and read all the news that is news in the world of ethnopolitics and paleoconservatism. The biggest story that I have found this week, this is a bombshell. A poll was conducted recently, and it was surveying primary voters in the state of Mississippi, just south of where we're sitting tonight. It was polling them on who they'd like to see win the Republican nomination in 2012. And Mississippi's current governor, Haley Barbour, won the poll. But they also asked an additional question of those being surveyed. And that was, do you think interracial marriage should be illegal? Despite constant brainwashing and relentless media propaganda, there still remains, and this may surprise some people, but not me, a great number of people in Mississippi who still adhere to the values of their parents. 46% of the people polled said that yes, interracial marriage should be illegal. Only 40% of those polled in Mississippi, these are registered voters, mind you, thought that it should be legal. Keith Alexander, let me say this before I turn it over to you. I think that those are very heartfelt opinions. I think they are natural and healthy. I think they are in accordance with our Christian faith. I think we should adhere to the racially divided sanctions as ordained by God. I will say this to avoid being a hypocrite. I don't believe that the government should have a hand in our freedom to associate with whom we want one way or the other. I can't say that I oppose the civil rights movement, which was nothing more than the abolishing of private property rights and forced integration, and then before the state criminalizing something like this, although I can say with every fiber of my being, I certainly sympathize with that which the Mississippians had to say on this issue, but pretty big. You know, 2011, after 50 years and billions of dollars worth of programming, movies, books, television shows, magazines, newspapers, pushing white genocide every single day. Over half the people, you know, I think if truth be known, well over half the people in Mississippi still hold traditional values on this issue. It's a big one.
You know, I think you're parsing it a little bit too closely, James. All of this procedural due process about whether you should have laws about it, I think is lost on the average person. What they were asked in Mississippi was whether or not they approved interracial marriage and whether they thought it ought to be illegal. And what this shows, what this survey shows, is that in the Mississippi in particular, the South, to a lesser extent, and in red state America, despite relentless psychological conditioning and brainwashing by the left, by the cultural Marxists, over the past 70 or more years, they just cannot eradicate the traditional mindset of people in red state America. People in red state America, if they can vote anonymously on this and won't suffer some type of opprobrium, come down four square on the side of the traditionalist viewpoint on just about every issue. And this is why the left, quite frankly, this is why somebody like Bill Ayers says 25 million people are going to have to die in the American Revolution that he proposes. Because we're like the kulaks. We're like the Ukrainian and white Russian peasants. They were special targets of the Bolsheviks. And the reason they were is because they were, in the viewpoint of the Bolsheviks, overly religious traditionalists. And therefore, they were not good candidates for conversion to the new communist outlook. And their solution was the final solution. Now, no one talks about that final solution. The only final solution we ever hear about is 6 million Jews. I remember when I was a kid, it was 11 million, and then somehow it got overnight reduced down to 6 million. But still, that's the most important 6 million people ever in the history of the world. 36 million Ukrainian and white Russian peasants don't hold a candle, even though they're six times as numerous as the Jewish people that died in World War II in the Holocaust. That Holocaust, of course, is not worthy of the name of Holocaust. In fact, you know, the ADL has decided that they basically have taken out a patent and a trademark on that name, the Holocaust. What is happening in Red State America is that people don't want to change. And this dovetails right in with Confederate History Month, James, because there is a basic difference in mindset, sense, and sensibility between people in the old Confederacy versus the New England transcendentalist, abolitionist Unitarians that fomented the war. And Abraham Lincoln was a fellow traveler with those people.
Don't go
See,
away.
We want it to be a totally different nation, and there was a reason why we wanted to be a totally different nation. We need to be a totally different nation back then and still do today.
We'll be back.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Opened up the show tonight. We got a little bit carried away in that last segment. I don't know how much you heard there going into the tail end of that commercial break. But opened up the show tonight with what I thought was just an incredibly interesting poll out of Mississippi, in which 46% of the respondents said that they think illegal. Why do I keep wanting to say illegal immigration? Interracial marriage should still be illegal. That's it. 46%, compared to 40% who believe that it shouldn't, with 14% unsure. And this is what I take from this. Once again, in summation, to recap, I believe that this is a terribly demoralizing blow to the cultural Marxists who, as I said in the last segment, for the last 50 years have been investing billions of dollars to condition our minds to accept that which is not natural. I believe the viewpoints of those in Mississippi who were voting in the affirmative on this or surveying in the affirmative on this are very, very legitimate, very natural. And it's not because I'm coming at this from some sort of supremacist angle. Far from it. I just believe that this is healthy. I believe this is what's right for all people, including the minorities. And I think if truth be told, a lot of blacks would vote the same way, particularly black women. But the thing that gets me excited about this story is that after all that conditioning, after all that propaganda, there are still a lot of people out there who are thinking for themselves. And this is proof of it. We've always said that the ideas that we advance on this show are still the ideas of most middle Americans and red state Americans. MTV, entertainment television, you know, the people who run the media, they don't speak for red state America. We do, and red state America is echoing our sentiments in a very big way on a very controversial subject. And as Keith and some of the people in the chat room have said too, the actual percentage of this would be much higher. In the year 2011, after all of the cultural Marxism we've been subjected to, psychological conditioning we've been subjected to, this measure, they would outlaw that in Mississippi if given the chance to vote. You mark my words on it. Now, that's something. I tell you, that is something in today's politically correct climate that they have done no better to change the mind of Southerners than that. Pretty big.
Yeah, James, it's it's important to really understand this in the context of the left-wing control of the media. The left-wing is a tiny proportion of America, but unfortunately, they've captured the high ground. They, through cultural Marxism, control the media, control higher academia. They control the entertainment industry, and all of those have been converted to engines to support a radical egalitarian left-wing agenda. They try to make it normal. They try to make it the standard fare for Americans, but Americans just aren't going along. And it's not just red state America. You know, I think that in blue state America, there would you'd find more support for that than you would think. If you just put it in terms of whether or not you approve of it and it was anonymous, you'd find all sorts of people doing this. And that shows you that human nature isn't as malleable as the left wishes it was. They're trying to shame us. They're trying to punish us. They're trying to use all sorts of sanctions to turn people around and get them to abandon what are basically normal, natural, instinctive senses of racial solidarity, for example, in the white Gentile population. And it really doesn't work. They can send you to the gulags, as they did in Soviet Russia and in communist China, or they can take away your job, they can take away any position of authority or honor in the community. That's the way that the soft tyranny of political correctness works here in the United States. Or you can be in the halfway house they have in Europe and Canada, where you can be prosecuted for hate speech for expressing that type of idea, for example. But nonetheless, people have this almost imprinted in their genes. What people don't understand is that up until 1967, it was legal in the United States to have anti-miscegenation laws. The case, the Supreme Court case that ruled they were unconstitutional was Loving versus Virginia. And despite the fact that it's been since 1967, it's been, you know, almost 50 years since that decision came down, you find 46% of Mississippians that still approve of the pre-Loving hegemony, I guess, or the viewpoint of Americans back then. The left is not succeeding in changing the hearts and minds of America.
And this isn't some, like I said, anti-black screed. I think this is what's best for all parties involved, and certainly our families too. But I think the biggest thing to get out of this is that it was a big slap in the face to political correctness, and that's something, regardless of where you stand on the issue, that we can all cheer for. Now, moving from Mississippi to Georgia, we know what's going on in Mississippi. What's going on in Georgia? Well, we all know what white flight is. When the neighborhood you live in starts to resemble a third world slum, the white people move out and go find greener pastures. That's white flight. It's a phenomenon that's been going on since, forced integration started occurring. White people have fled Atlanta in particular for obvious reasons. Parts of the majority black city now resemble the third world. Now, though, a collection of white flight communities outside Atlanta want to secede from Fulton and DeKalb counties and form a new Milton County. And if anyone's familiar with Atlanta geography, you'll know that Atlanta lies within DeKalb and Fulton counties, the Atlanta metropolitan area. Well, there are some white flight pockets there, and they want to secede from the two major counties and form their own little enclave. However, the Black Legislative Caucus of Georgia has filed a lawsuit demanding that the city charters of these white flight communities be dissolved because they claim that the seceded white flight cities violate their voting rights. It seems like everything does, Keith.
See, when all else fails for the left, when they can't prevail with the executive, when they can't prevail in the legislature, they fall back to that old standby, the courts, to rule autocratically in their favor. That's why we make such a big deal every year of the Brown versus Board of Education decision, which we're probably going to focus on for several weeks next month. The anniversary is May the 7th. It's a day that will live in infamy, at least in our opinion, in America, because basically what happened is that you had a critarchy, government by a cabal, an oligarchy of judges that outweighs the voice of the people. That's what the left has depended upon throughout its history. That was the philosopher's stone. The Brown versus Board of Education decision was truly a turning point in America, and it's what allowed liberals to preach to the rest of us and make the law of the land opinions and positions that would never have been passed into law by the chief executive or by the legislature, and they made it stick. And that's why the left always comes back, just like a dog comes back to his vomit. The left, when they don't like something, they eventually come back to the power of judicial review and judicial tyranny, James.
We're going to pick up on that after this commercial break. Folks, keep in mind, we have been really putting up a lot of hot articles at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We're going to try to cover as much as we can over the course of tonight's program. And to add to all this, of course, during the third hour tonight, we will refocus our attention on the celebration of Confederate History Month. April is Confederate History Month throughout the South, and we're going to be doing our part tonight to honor the glorious history of the Confederate States of America. But first, a lot more news coming your way this hour. We're going to talk about an update on some of the B-grade civil rights icons. And what did Pat Buchanan say about the South? Find out right after this. If you knew
Peggy Sue, then don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Peggy Sue. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get
out of this place. All right. Started off the show tonight with the big, I thought that was a bombshell, poll result out of Mississippi. Now we have moved over to the southeast. We're in Georgia now, where the Black Legislative Caucus there in the state of Georgia has filed a lawsuit seeking to dissolve the charters of white flight communities within close proximity to Atlanta. So this is the kind of thing, so white people now, we know that private property rights have been abolished. Now, though, you can't even decide where you want to live. civil rights, the so-called civil rights movement abolished private property rights. Now we can't even decide where we want to live. In Georgia, you can at least, if this lawsuit sails through. This is the kind of third world corruption you get when you hire people of the third world to represent you. I don't know how it's going to play out, but it's interesting.
Well, I tell you what's going to happen on this. First of all, if it passes in Georgia, it won't be long until it's law of the land. We right now are skating on thin ice as conservatives. We have a one-vote margin in the U.S. Supreme Court. And if one of the conservative justices dies or suddenly has some road to Damascus moment where he converts to liberalism, we're sunk. But here's, you know, they don't mind you moving, James. They want you to move. They just want to be able to reach you and get your tax money. That's what the whole smear is about here. Basically, the black politicians in Atlanta don't want white people, one, moving out of Atlanta, and two, then creating their own cities. And this is a key because an existing city cannot be annexed by Atlanta. You know, they're more than happy for white people to move into unincorporated areas of the county around them, just so long as they can eventually assert their right to tax them. Because, as we've said many times before, there's a parasite-host relationship, unfortunately, between the black and the white population. Don't kill the dog or all the fleas will die. When the dog leaves, the fleas start hopping around, desperately trying to find a dog to hop onto so they can suck his blood and gain new life. And that's what is happening in Atlanta. This is the practical, boots-on-the-ground explanation of what's going on. And they're upset that these white flight suburbs incorporate, get city charters, and then they are forever beyond their power to tax them. That's why they've come up with another strategy called metro government, where they basically get the right to tax other municipalities because they're part of the same metropolitan area. And see, this is how Memphis has sustained itself and not become Detroit over the past 50 years. They would continue to annex and gobble up the white flight suburbs. And, of course, after their first manifestation is as a white flight suburb, then they become a black flight suburb as more prosperous blacks try to move out of the old hood because they don't want to live in a third world situation. And, of course, when that happens, it's not long before the suburb becomes the new slum, James. And, you know, basically the conundrum of black politicians, the perennial conundrum is how to get the white people's money without capturing the white people's votes. And something like moving outside of the city limits and then creating another city so that city, the larger city, the now majority black city of Atlanta, cannot annex you. They think that's dirty pool, and they're going to the court, and they're going to say this is, some type of unconstitutionality. It must be. It's got to be, right?
Yeah, they claim that because the white people are moving out of Atlanta and going to form their own cities, that that's a violation of their voting rights. I mean, and how in the heck are white people moving out of Atlanta keeping blacks from being able to vote? That doesn't make any sense at all, but that's what they're claiming. The lawsuit seeks for the dissolution of about a half a dozen cities here in and around Atlanta: Dunwoody, Sandy Springs, Johns Creek, Milton, and Chattahoochee Hills, for anyone familiar with the Atlanta area. They even dug up old Reverend Joseph Lowry. Oh, Joe Lowry's back in the picture, Keith. He's still in the game after all these years. Kind of like the Republican Party digging up...
He looks like a picture of some Reconstruction-era black legislator, you know. All he needs is a cutaway coat. He's got the Colonel Sanders mustache and goatee to go along with it. And, you know, this, you know, another example of the more things change, the more they stay the same. You've got that, you know, black people pretend that they can get along without white people's money and, the environment that white people create, but they're desperate to keep them within arm's reach because they know if they don't, then things are going to devolve and they're going to go back to the third world. As look at Detroit, Camden, New Jersey, East St. Louis, Illinois, Oakland, California. It doesn't matter where you are. They've got to live in the proximity of a large number of white people in order to maintain a first world lifestyle and community.
And even then, it's hard enough. But, yeah, Joe Lowry, like I said, it's kind of like the Republicans when they dug up Bob Dole to serve as their nominee in 1996. But here he is. One of the plaintiffs, I guess his voting rights were infringed with these white people moving out of Atlanta somehow. You got to read it. You got to read it, folks. Go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. We got all the news that is news about this story, facts and references and links. And be sure to leave a comment while you're there. I tell you, you just can't make this stuff up. Now, what's going on? Let's revisit the story after the cameras went dark, featuring some of the B-list civil rights icons in recent history. I actually picked up this article from a third party. Name is William Houston. He's a graduate from the University of Alabama. He writes that one of his favorite hobbies for the last several years has been keeping track of former civil rights celebrities, quote-unquote, after their 15 minutes of undeserved media fame were over. It was an excellent way for him to demonstrate how political correctness has corrupted American journalism. Everyone in America, he writes, has at least a passing familiarity with these victims of white racism, but few are familiar with their trials since then, which the mainstream media has conveniently refused to give the same amount of inordinate attention. So, where are these martyrs for social justice now? Rodney King. Everybody knows the Rodney King story from the early 90s. What has been going on with Rodney King since then? He's been arrested for soliciting and having sex with a transvestite prostitute in Hollywood, beating his wife, multiple DUIs, vandalism, beating his own child, and indecent exposure in a public park while being high on PCP. He drove his car into a house after weaving through traffic and speeding at over 100 miles an hour. 2 years after that, he was arrested after threatening to kill his daughter and former girlfriend. Just last month, he was stopped by the LAPD for erratic driving and was issued a citation for driving with an expired license. So 20 years after the camera stopped rolling on Rodney King, Keith, there is the rest of the story, courtesy of the Political Cesspool radio program. He's still a threat to public safety. Jenna 6, the Jenna 6, Louisiana, where they hurt their knuckles, you know, these six black kids hurt their knuckles, you know, beating a white kid within an inch of his life, and somehow they were martyrs because they actually, you know, got arrested for forming this lynch mob. You know the story. The six black students in Gina, Louisiana, who in an unprovoked assault beat a white student named Justin Barker nearly to death in 06. Al Sharpton, who we ran out of Memphis a few years ago, marched with Gina. 15,000 to 20,000 paid supporters were there to clear the injustice that was done to Barker's black attackers. The Gina 6 movement at the time was held in the mainstream media as the first struggle of the 21st century civil rights movement. Well, since then, I'll just give you a quick rundown. One of the Gina 6 was convicted and sentenced for simple battery, simple criminal damage to property less than $500, and simple assault.
He's a good citizen of the group.
Yeah, that was the good citizen of the group. Another one was arrested for assaulting another high school student. Another one was arrested for trespassing and battery after he struck a man from behind. Another one spit in the face of his female attorney and pushed her to the ground. He was arrested for shoplifting, resisting arrest, and simple assault after trying to steal $700 worth of clothes from Dillard's. Yet another one was arrested with battery after punching someone who was, quote-unquote, running his mouth at a Gina barbershop. And it goes on and on and on from there. The Duke Lacrosse stripper, we know all about her. Well, she just tried to kill somebody with a kitchen knife. We're going to come back and tell you even more. Got to turn it over to Keith for some commentary, too, right after this break. Folks, I'm just getting started. Hang on.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
We've got so much stuff going on our website tonight, we're never going to be able to get it all out on the air. So I encourage you to go visit the site, find these stories that we're covering tonight and a lot more that we're not going to have time to get to, and leave your comments on the matter too. Engage in a discussion with other political cesspool fans by visiting thepoliticalcesspool.org. Now, if you want to join us in the political cesspool online chat, go to cfcc.org. Now, I was just recapping what's been going on in recent years with the heroes of the 21st century civil rights movement. Rodney King, the Gina Six, every single one of them has been arrested. Rodney King has a rap sheet, my God, like Santa Claus's Christmas list. And now the Duke lacrosse stripper, Crystal Magnum. Of course, we all remember her. She falsely accused three Duke lacrosse players, or maybe the whole team, all of whom were white, of course, for raping her at a party. Like the Gina Six, the Duke lacrosse scandal ignited a media firestorm about white racism and brought out all the usual suspects. Well, since the cameras stopped rolling on her hoax, we find out that she has been arrested and charged with assault with a deadly weapon after attempting to kill her boyfriend with a kitchen knife. The officers who arrived at the scene found that Magnum had succeeded in stabbing him in the torso. Earlier, in another incident, jurors found Magnum guilty of three counts of contributing to the abuse and neglect of minors, her own children, by the way, resisting arrest, $500 worth of property damage, and she had set fire to her clothes in a bathtub, or the clothes of her boyfriend in a bathtub. These are the people that the media is exalting as victims of white racism, and then look at what goes on behind the scenes in their private lives. And frankly, folks, nothing about these backgrounds that I'm bringing to your attention right now separates them from most of the people in that community. And that's quite sad and unfortunate. But Keith, what's important about this story?
What's important is that it shows you that all of these people who are the supposed victims of white racism are actually thugs, reprobates, and who deserve all the misfortunes that they've experienced in life and more. You know, civil rights heroes aren't coming from central casting now, apparently. Rosa Parks was particularly and specifically trained and picked for her little role in the Montgomery bus boycott. You know, they tried to find little old lady type that would, you know, be as meek as a lamb to get media attention. Now the media apparently has dropped their guard and they're picking garden variety thugs and trying to portray them to us as innocence abused. People like Crystal Magnum, people like Michael Bell, spelled M-Y-C-H-A-L, who was the ringleader of the racial beatdown group that attacked this white kid in Jena, Louisiana, and Rodney King. You know, Rodney King, despite the ample evidence that he is just a pernicious thug and criminal, a recidivist that just cannot change his behavior, you can still bring a white suburban housewife to tears by quoting his famous line, "Can't we all just get along?" You know, they just get choked up. And they think this guy is the second coming of Christ. What is it about people? Why do people want to believe lies? I guess that's the $64,000 question, James. With all the evidence that is out there circulating about how all of these so-called civil rights victims, these heroic people that stood up to white racism, they are, you know, they have feet of clay, they are reprobates, they're criminals, they're thugs, but somehow, because of the media control that we all suffer under, none of this is ever brought to light. It takes people like the political cesspool to bring this out, or this young guy who is what he's in Youth for Western Civilization chapter at the University of Alabama. You know, it's all there to be found. Any investigative reporter could find it that was wanting to look for it. But, of course, the silence is deafening. They want to keep the truth from the American people because the truth basically supports the traditional viewpoint on issues like this, that criminals tend to be guilty. People that have a long rap sheet didn't get that because the government just decided to persecute them. They get that rap sheet because they're criminals and criminally inclined and trying, you know, and apparently they don't think that black people ought to be arrested for anything in America. And if they are arrested, then it's the product of a vast right-wing conspiracy.
And even more than that, another thing we've been blogging about, well, over the years, but a couple of incidents we've been posting this week, how do they explain away the disproportionate amount of crime committed by black professional athletes? Now, they can excuse every crime ever committed by a black, and believe me, they do, by saying that they have been victims of white oppression, slavery still haunts their subconscious, you know, racism is prevalent, institutionalized racism, they were impoverished, this, that, and the other. That's how they excuse most crimes. But every single day you will find a crime committed by a multimillionaire black athlete. You know, economic circumstance doesn't trump nature. Allen Iverson just got arrested a couple of days ago. LeBron James's mother just got arrested for spitting in the face of a valet attendant who was, you know, late bringing her car, according to her. She was drunk when she did it. Dez Bryant won't pull up his pants, famous Dallas Cowboys. Look, I could go on and on and on about this, but I don't need to because you know it's true. I'm not saying anything that's even remotely controversial unless the truth itself is controversial. That's what we do here on the Political Cesspool.
Yeah, as we've always said, the truth has no agenda. The truth is the truth, and as the Bible says, you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Basically, these are all the arguments that we need. Just look at reality. Look at what happens involving these so-called incidents of white racism, and you see more than, more often than not, in fact, almost 100% of the time, they're just monuments to black criminality. If you really want to know the truth about issues like this, you need to read The Color of Crime by Jerry Taylor. For example, the Duke lacrosse hoax. If you read The Color of Crime, you will learn that the rarest of all violent crimes in America is white-on-black rape. It just don't happen. Every year, year after year, the official U.S. Justice Department number is less than 10, which means that the actual number could be zero because less than 10 incidents doesn't register on their database. But nonetheless, we keep getting
about it.
And then you get some young paperback writer guy that's willing to sell his soul in order to have success, like John Grisham, and the first book out of the box is A Time to Kill, which has a bunch of white guys raping this 12-year-old virginal black girl and drives her righteous daddy over the edge. You know, when will people stop slandering white Gentiles with these totally specious and transparent hoaxes? That's what I would like to know. It's just, you know, it never seems to end. And, you know, we had Tawana Brawley. That should have done in Al Sharpton. He was the one that came up with this idea that this black girl was raped by a bunch of policemen, I think in New Jersey, and that they wiped feces all over there and wrote racial epithets on her body. Now, you know, you talk about that this is the strangest hoax ever, and it was proved to be a complete and total hoax, but Teflon Al just keeps on, like the Energizer Bunny, just keeps on ticking, and the media keeps taking him seriously and insisting that the rest of us take this fraudulent buffoon, this guy with a pompadour haircut. He looks like the black Conway Twitty or something with this.
James Brown's.
Yeah, it's just absolutely absurd. And then you have Crystal Mangum, and you have a white liberal DA who basically fabricates all this evidence and tries to prosecute a bunch of innocent white college kids because he's willing to do any manipulation in order to get reelected, James. It's pathetic, but nobody seems to pay a price for all this fraud.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here this first hour. We're about to have to take a breather, but we'll be back with you after Liberty News Radio brings you a burst of national news. One issue I did want to cover this hour, we're just not going to have time to do it. You got to read our friend Pat Buchanan's latest article that I put up at the Political Cesspool website. It's entitled "Hatred of the South is Hatred of America." He asked the rhetorical question, why do the mainstream elites hate Southerners? And he answers it for us and for himself, because Southerners are white Christians. That's why they're hated. That's why they were hated then. That's why they're hated now. And it's just one of Pat's hardest hitting and most brutally honest pieces he has ever written. And we're proud to have hosted Pat on this show on a couple of occasions. Check it out at thepoliticalcesspool.org or just Google Pat Buchanan, "Hatred of the South is Hatred of America." That's the name of the column. We're going to take a break, folks. James Edwards, we'll be back with you with the second hour.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, "Something's got a hold on me." Yeah! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Self-Righteous Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the amen.